Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome back to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast, and we're just so blessed that you're joining us for another episode. And today is part two of my three-part interview with retired Assistant Fire Chief Linda Green. She's been sharing with us about PTSD, its symptoms, the effects on first responders, and we've had an in-depth discussion. If you missed any of yesterday's episode, you need to go back and catch up, because we can't cover everything we've been going over. It's just so much information that we have to try and get in. Now, today, she's going to start off by telling us the event, about the event that triggered her PTSD. And it's heart-wrenching, to say the least, and you can completely understand how all that built-up stress over all these years, and that's one of the problems the first responders have, is they have to suppress their personal feelings and emotions in order to accomplish the mission at hand. But we're going to hear what happened to her that triggered her event. So here's Linda Green. Yeah, tell us about the fire in 2015 and how you were able to identify that as the trigger for your PTSD.
Yeah, so the Valley Fire in 2015 started early afternoon. I was actually off duty that day. Noticed on my pager was blinking the blue light, so I knew a group page had been sent out. And so I had turned on my scanner to listen to the radio traffic while I was working in the yard. The on-duty battalion chief asked for another chief officer. So I called in because I'm only about 20 minutes from where the fire is, knowing that another chief officer lives like right down the road from where that fire had started. He was out of the area, so I responded. My first view of the fire wasn't doing too much from the angle where I was approaching from. And I met up with the battalion chief who was running the fire at the time. He was the incident commander. And I was going to take command so he could focus on the operations side of it. And during that transition briefing, it was like, well, did you hear the Mayday traffic? And I said, no, what's going on? And so he gave me a quick rundown. We had four firefighters that were in their fire shelters. They had been surrounded by the fire. And it was a very short transition briefing at that point. He said, well, you go find them. I'm taking command. And that was the start of it. What finally nailed the coffin shut was several minutes later, they had been removed from that situation, and I drove to where they were at to check on them so I could give a briefing to our chief. And it was a very surreal scene. I can tell you this. It's like one of the firefighters that walked by is like, oh, he used to work in my battalion when I was battalion chief. And you know, I'm doing this visual check. Okay, he has a couple minor burns. He's okay. Another firefighter already had an IV started in him because we asked for the air ambulance early on in this whole scenario. And I finally walked up to one of the other firefighters who'd been injured. It's a captain I knew for years. We had actually been partners at one time. And he had very significant, very obvious third-degree burns. And as the flight medic walked up, had a brief exchange with them about where these guys were going to be taken to the hospital. And I know I was thinking the captain, he used to be a bagpipe player, and excellent bagpipe player. And I was, remember looking at him and saying, how is he going to be able to play in the future? And I know that's the second, you know, it got personal for me right then and there. Somebody I knew was seriously hurt.
Yeah.
And I can look back to that moment and say, any opportunity I had to not get it, a PTS diagnosis, was done and over with at that moment. Mm. So
did you notice after this, you know, because like I say, with my experience, you know, you deal with what's going on because that's your job. You got to deal it. You're dealing with all these moving parts and you're organizing it and you're so deeply enrooted in the situation and rectifying the situation. After things, you know, you were able to, you know, that's taken care of and now you're relaxing, trying to relax. When did you start noticing changes in your behavior and mood and all that beginning to take place?
Within 2 weeks, actually. The insomnia was obvious. I mean, the fire turned out to be like 70,000 acres, but it was all said and done. You know, 2,000 structures burned, 5 civilians died. And it impacted such a large part of the county where I live. I could never really down regulate. You know, the incident base that was set up is only 4 blocks from my house. So I couldn't even go to the grocery store without seeing, you know, 100 different firefighters. And so I never really had that opportunity to down regulate for a few weeks. I finally got a chance to take a week off, left the county. I slept like a rock that first night, and because we're out by the ocean. And that was the last good night of sleep I got for well over a year. That wasn't either a good night's sleep only because I was taking a prescription drug to help me sleep, or I recovered enough where I could sleep well through the night without night terrors or having nightmares or just not even wanting to go to sleep. So, so for me, it started fairly early. Within 6 weeks, I knew I couldn't continue working on only 2 hours of sleep or 3 hours of sleep. So I went to see my own doctor to get a sleep prescription. She wanted to put me on anxiety meds right then and there, and I refused. Said, just let me get some sleep. I'll be okay. And because normally that's how it works for me. So I know what my normal stress response is, especially after being on a job for 30 years. And I knew it was not a normal stress response, but I figured it was just because I couldn't sleep. So she gave me the prescription for the sleep medicine. I left. She checked in. It's a large health system that was in at the time. She checked in with a staff psychologist who basically really wanted to talk to me. I kept getting this phone call from a number I didn't know from the Bay Area. So I don't know who this is. I'm not returning the call.
All right.
Finally, I got a phone call from the health system. Hey, we're trying to get you in to see so-and-so. Oh, okay. Now I know who that is. Went to see her. And again, this is part of the ability to function. I went to the wrong office. So she had to come over, pick me up, haul me back over to where her office was. And we sat down and talked and started having a plan. So I don't think you have PTSD, but definitely you got stress. Let's work on the stress from the fire and stuff like that. So that was the path I started on. I was doing okay. You know, a few months down the road, things were good. You know, springtime, and everything was nice and green. But then things started happening that started me down that slippery slope to finally hitting all the criteria that needed to be hit to get diagnosed. Probably my last month prior to getting diagnosed in July 2016, this is how long it took to get there. Paranoid at work. I had a startled response, and just walking down a hallway, somebody came out of a side office, I would jump. You know, the fits of rage were increasing. You know, sometimes I would get to the office, open up my laptop, just look at it. My brain would just go blank, and I just close the laptop and leave the office. You know, I'd be in the office for like 5 minutes any given day. And then finally, we're going on vacation, and we like doing RV trips with a group of other people from the Department of Retired, and we're driving to a camp with them. Drove through actually the burn scar of another fire that happened the year prior, and I had a panic attack in the midst of all that. And the day before I went back to work after that vacation, I happened to have an appointment with my psychologist and walked in and said, hey, here's what's been going on in the 3 weeks since we last talked. And she says, okay, you have post-traumatic stress. And it was good to know what was going on, because I really thought I was going crazy. It's, I don't know, I don't understand any of this other than it's like it's totally not normal for me for all this to be happening. And I was, to this day, I'm so fortunate and grateful that I had already a working relationship with the psychologist who understood first responders, because she had, most of her career I've been working with law enforcement. And it's like so fortunate that I already had that relationship with her where I could walk in and say, hey, here's what's going on. And she could say, okay, you have PTS. You're going to be in my office every week from now on. And said, okay.
Yeah. Amen. You know, I know one officer that was involved in a shooting, and he quit three, you know, because as soon as you're involved in a shooting, there's, you know, okay, you're now on paid leave while we investigate it and all that. And he didn't even wait for the investigation to get done. He quit 3 days later. You know, some officers, you know, ridiculed him for being weak, you know, and all that. Some tried to reach out to him, but, you know, he again rebuffed the efforts, and he was later diagnosed with PTSD, so we do know that. But is there now a better acceptance of a person that has the type of reactions like you were talking about and that I was giving an example of among peers and personally as, you know, for the individual? Because I know there was, you know, back 20 years ago, it was, like you said, it was more as a stigma, like, oh, you know, that's a war thing. You know, you weren't, you know, how is it today? Is there a better acceptance of, you know, hey, you know, we know what you got and we'll help you get through it?
Yes and no. There is a growing awareness at the highest levels of police and fire organizations that it does impact their members. With that said, there are some states that do not recognize post-traumatic stress as an occupational injury. So there's no recourse for people to file a workers' compensation claim, right? And depending on the department they work for, that stigma still exists. It's, you're weak and you're not welcome to be here. Doesn't matter how messed up you are. It's like if you spend any time in Facebook at all, there's so many different PTS support groups on Facebook, and you spend time in there, whether they're fire or police or more focused on EMS people. It is amazing to me just how much or how little support that there is depending on where you work. And even if you're suicidal, I think I remember reading a comment just last year, somebody was very concerned about a coworker and had gone to the higher ups in his department, and in a state that doesn't recognize PTS as an occupational injury. And the response is basically, it's not our problem unless he commits suicide on the property of the station. It's like, wow. It's like, and the fact that people like that are running departments, and you see what the suicide numbers are in law enforcement and what's going on in the fire service, what's going on in EMS, and the reported suicides to different organizations are keeping track of that and to publicize the effect of the stress of the job. To an organization, they know it's being underreported, right? Because, you know, if you have life insurance, some life insurance policies won't pay for a suicide.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so, so even if they get recognized as, this was actually a suicide, they don't report it publicly a lot of times who that person was, so that the family doesn't suffer. Not only the personal loss, but then an economic loss on top of that. So
I know our department, if an officer commits suicide, his pension benefits don't get passed to the beneficiaries. It has to be a line of duty death type thing. And so, yeah, I know what you're talking about. You know, though, if it's something along that lines, a lot of times they'll just say, you know, this was caused by something that he experienced, and therefore we're classifying his line of duty.
Yeah.
Amen. We're going to take another break right now to talk about your book, and then we'll come back in a minute. Okay, so just hold on. Folks, we'll be right back after this message.
Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. This post-traumatic stress disorder is a very serious condition that has become more widely recognized in the medical community over the last 10 years or so. And Linda Green's book, Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS, is a must-read and a must-have if you or someone you care about has PTSD. After 30-plus years on the front line as a first responder, Linda worked her way up to assistant chief of a major fire protection agency in California, and she fell under the tenacious claws of PTSD. This book details some of the steps she took to regain control of her life, and she knows it will help you as well. So go down to the show notes to order your copy of Linda Green's book, Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS. Do so today.
And we're back with Linda Green. She's been telling us about PTSD and her life and the department and some of the treatments and symptoms and things like that they're going on with it. You need to check out her book, Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS. It's available on Amazon. You also see the link down below in the show notes. But Linda, when, you know, in your book, you talk about intention. What do you mean by that word, intention? Tell us that.
Intention is being purposeful in pursuing your recovery.
Okay.
You know, I took an attitude early on that basically it didn't matter what I had to do to get better. I was going to do it. Nothing is off the table. And to this day, there's still nothing off the table. If I had to go to the point of finding a doctor that did treatment with MDMA, ecstasy, then I would have gone that route. But, you know, I was fortunate for the most part. I got help with basic talk therapy. EMDR helped me. A lot of these things where I started journaling, and that's actually what a lot of the book is, are my journal entries from that year where I was really, really struggling. And that intention is about trying to be very purposeful every day on what you're doing with your recovery. Because recovery is a lifestyle. It's not just something you do for 6 months and then you go back to your old way of living, because a lot of times your old way of living probably contributed to your PTS in some small manner. But it's like every day I got up and it's like, oh, I have to go to therapy today. All right. It's going to suck, but I'm going to go. But that's the attitude. It's like every day, what am I doing today that'll help me get better?
Yeah.
Even if it's just 5 minutes during that day, you're doing something that supports your recovery. You're setting the attention. I want to get better, and I will do what I need to do to get better. It's that simple.
Is it possible for someone to be cured of PTSD? Is it something they just have to learn to live with the rest of their life and just cope with it?
Some people do get cured and are able to continue in their job. I know a lot of people like that have gone back to police work. They're back in the fire service. They're back doing their thing as a paramedic. And it is possible. You may still have like a scar or two, just like, you know, you have knee surgery for a torn meniscus. You can still do your job, but your knee is going to be less than 100%. Well, you can still do your job with PTSD. You just need to be aware of the factors that could influence that to regress. And I also know some people go back to work and it's too much and they eventually have to retire.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are very capable of working even while they're going through their treatment program, and it depends on what your job is, right? So, you know, it's like there are people, and I want to throw this out here, that, you know, it's not just military or police and fire that can get it. You know, people who have been in car accidents can get PTSD. People who are victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, certainly can get PTS. But are they able to function at least at some level so that they can work in society? Absolutely. And it's not like you're stuck with the absolute worst symptoms for the rest of your life. Are there some people like that? Yes, there are. They're just so horribly scarred.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you keep doing what you need to do and adopt a healthier lifestyle, the biggest challenge I see with some people, and I see it in these different Facebook groups, is like, I'll do anything except talk to a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
I said, okay, you're taking one of your keys off. It's like, why would you not want to talk to a therapist? It doesn't mean you're crazy. You're not crazy because you have PTSD.
Right. Amen. Yeah. You're certified as a high performance coach. Exactly. What does that mean? And how does that help you to help those with PTSD?
Well, the high performance coaching helps people elevate their levels of energy, courage, influence, productivity. And the reason I became a certified high performance coach, prior to my diagnosis with PTS, I was going into the final year of my career. I didn't know what I was going to do afterwards. And, you know, I knew I was kind of stuck in a rut, right? So I said, here's a concept. I'm going to hire a life coach and help figure out what I'm going to do moving forward. And I knew nothing about high performance coaching at the time. it just turned out that's the program I found somebody to work with. And as I was going through the worst of my PTS and coming back out of it, I really started thinking about what I learned in those 12 sessions that I'd been involved with. And I realized that some of those tools and techniques I had learned while I was going through that coaching program actually masked some of my symptoms, because I had learned how to function at a higher level because I was using the tools I had learned. And then I just had this thought, well, what was in that program that helped me accelerate my recovery, not only forestall it a little bit, but recover faster as I started to reapplying those same techniques. And in 2017, fortunately, I had some income that showed up, and I was able to go to the coaching certification, because I really want what's in this coaching that I can pull out and help other people with PTS. And so it's like, it's its own standalone program. I can take people through high performance coaching if whether they're injured or not, but I've helped some other people with PTS and kind of morphed it a little bit.
Amen.
Because some questions don't, you know, they can be overwhelming sometimes. Well, I just ask you to rate this on a scale of 1 to 5. How do you think about it? And people get it then. But, you know, it's just using some of that information to help people who may not have access. And that's why in section 6 in the book, there's a whole bunch of journaling exercises. And some of that's based on my own journey with my PTS and with alcohol recovery. Some of it is based on concepts I learned through the coaching program, but it's at least to give somebody a start.
What kind of journal would they be keeping, and how does that help them keep track of their progress?
Well, what helped for me while I was journaling is, like, sometimes I would just be super angry. I would journal instead of taking out my family.
Mm.
Things happen, and by the time you go see your doctor, you may not remember that you only had 2 hours of sleep any given night because you're having nightmares. And that's one of the things for me, I didn't mention I was having nightmares early on. And that probably delayed my diagnosis and getting the appropriate treatment for what I needed to deal with. So you can journal and keep track of your symptoms. You can journal to let loose of that anger and rage in a way that's not going to damage your family. You can journal for gratitude. when I started journaling, I was just keeping a gratitude journal. And because that's what I would do right before going to bed. Well, what am I grateful for today? Trying to set myself up for a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. So I talk about journaling a lot because it is a good way of capturing how you're feeling in the moment. Okay. And sometimes you can go back a few days and look at what you wrote, and it'll make more sense. Right? It helps
help you identify shift. Triggers and stuff.
Too. Yeah, absolutely. Because you never know what a trigger is. I was in a Tai Chi class and I couldn't settle into my normal flow. And a few weeks went by and I was back in class. And again, I couldn't get into my normal flow. And so why these two sessions? And I was able to identify that some of the background music included, it was like the Southwest type music. And every now and then there'd be this harsh wind sound. And so, oh, we had 50-mile-an-hour winds on that fire. Mm-hmm. And the sound of the wind was my first identified trigger.
Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time again today. This was part two of a three-part interview I'm doing with Assistant Fire Chief Linda Green. Now, she has been detailing the journey that she endured over her 30 years, the continuous buildup of stress, and then she shared at the beginning of today's interview the event that actually triggered her PTSD, all that stress that built up over the years. And we concluded today's portion of the interview with her explaining the importance of journaling and how that is one method that helps those suffering from PTSD to be able to identify certain triggers that bring back the memories, bring back the feelings, bring back the emotions that they try to deal with. And folks, it is so important that you go down in the show notes and order her book. This book is chock full of information. She has the examples of the journaling entries and things like that that will help you. I know you know somebody suffering from PTSD. It could be prior military, it could be a police officer, first responder, doctors, nurses, emergency room workers. All of these people that serve us by stifling their emotions and keeping it all in order to help those going through a traumatic event eventually build up so much stress within themselves that they fall victim to PTSD. So go down in the show notes, get Linda Green's book. It's called Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS. If you can, order two and give one away to a first responder that you know. You're going to help them. And if you, especially if you are suffering from PTSD or you know someone who is, get this book for them. Put it into their hands. Have them get in touch with Linda Green. Go down the show notes, get in touch with her on the website, use the contact form, and order her book today. Okay, come back tomorrow as we conclude our interview with Linda Green. It's getting into the good stuff now. Until then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this, your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters,
where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.